being right.
Order the Monday, November, what is today, 5th? Police Judicial and Legal Committee of Mount Pleasant Town Council. It is past the hour of 12:30. I appreciate everybody being here today. And the first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes, and I do have a correction that I would like to make. It's minor, but that's me in grammar. It's on page 5, the next to the last line, and I know this is from a transcript, and it was me talking. It came out as residence with a C-E, and the reference is actually residence, which is our citizens, so if we could just make that one change. Are there any other amendments to the minutes, and can we get a motion to approve as amended? We have a motion?
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as amended.
All right. We've motions and seconds. Second. All right. Sorry, good. All right. We have a motion. We have a second. Any discussion? All in favor of the to approve the minutes as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It passes. Item number public comments. If you would like to make a comment, please come forward, or we can bring the microphone to you. You have 2 minutes, and you may address this committee. Yes, ma'am. We'll bring it to you. You don't have to get up. Please give your name and address.
I'm Roberta Dominick. I live at 2609 Coral Vine Court, and I'm here to beg the department to stop having me under surveillance. This is a ribbon that's in decorating box in the other end of my house. When I woke up to go to the bathroom at 3 o'clock in the morning, it was floating in my bedroom around. Now, I'm not on drugs. I know that this has been a surveillance for a long, long time. Now, I have a GPS on my car, which I don't mind. I was part of the volunteering of the program for senior citizens. After my husband died, I wanted to get on the Children's Academy and do some constructive conversations. I was not allowed to do it. I can't volunteer because I'm under surveillance. This is a towel, and this towel has the markings of the stuff that comes out of my vents. While my daughter was here in October, we were in the laundry room and the water was coming down the ceiling. She has a master's in chemistry. She soaked up as much as she could to take back to Raleigh to take to NC State. I am beside myself in fear, anxiety. I'm an 82-year-old woman, crippled. And for some reason, I am the person of interest to either federal, whatever. Tried to talk to Chief Sewell when I was taking the course. He would not talk to me. So it has been that long that I have been involved in the police. They come down my street. I don't know what for. Have I left? Is there someone there? Is there someone I know that they want to know? No one wants to talk to me. I've got a problem with flooding. That's how I fell. I'm a widow. I'm not supposed to get emotional. But the stuff that is happening is visible. My dog is frightened. When I come back from somewhere, he's there. The plates on the wall they can come like a toaster, the heat. My heart is broken. I don't know where I can say, how do we resolve that? If you want me to go to jail, I'm too old.
Okay. That's the 2 minutes. May we get your address more clearly again?
26-09 Coral Vine.
Coral Vine?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the cul-de-sac in Seaside Farms.
Got it.
Please, I'm asking you, help me. Help my dog.
Okay.
Please.
We'll be glad to.
We're going to help you right now.
Thank you, ma'am.
We've got a chief advocate that we can get her in touch with.
Thank you, ma'am.
I hope so. I'll even root for your team.
I love it.
Thank you, ma'am.
Come on, I won't go that far.
She's a Cowboys fan.
Oh, okay. Boy, that's even worse.
I guess this is off the record, but let's just make sure we follow up and do. Thank you very much. Do what needs to be done. I appreciate that. Any other public comment? Yes, sir.
Tough act to follow, but I'm here about the child luring laws. My name's Kevin Cardane, 3032 River Vista Way. Father of three young daughters. There was a concern that was raised the second time in about a year of somebody appearing to approach a child inappropriately. Since a lot of my information that I get from the town comes through the mayor's Facebook page, I responded to that and said, there's a state law being proposed by two of our legislators. One of them was Nancy Mace, one of them was Hugh Hewitt, that they were going to try again. Lee Hewitt. Yeah. They were going to try again to get that passed. It got deleted. That ain't political. That's just ridiculous. Okay? On this topic, there's no politics, Mr. Mayor. There's no grandstanding. There's no Twitter wars. Okay? This is a topic that people are very upset about. Their kids are out in the street and vulnerable. And I just looked at it from a police perspective. I had a conversation with the, I'm not sure if it was the chief or when the other assistant chief was in charge that week, and said, it turns out one of them wasn't really what the kid thought it was, which is fine. But both of the incidents happened in places where a kid could easily be pulled away into a rural zone, you know, right across 41 or right up 17. They're at the ends of town. So my question became, can we focus more police resources in that area just to put people's minds at ease, because it's really a perception is everything in the mind of a child. So if the kid felt fear, then we should react to it and try and figure out ways. Other parts of town, you see a lot more police activity, cars around and everything. In some parts, like, wow, what are they doing here? You know, and that's, I'm not saying they're doing anything wrong. I'm saying maybe the department needs to expand at some point or redirect. We spent a big traffic DUI thing and different units could probably be chopped up, but we have to make it a priority to go after this stuff. And letting people know that there's an effort in Columbia is a good thing. That if we can get the law more like Florida, where we could go after, actually arrest somebody for talking to a kid or approaching them inappropriately, which maybe we can't do currently, that's a good thing. That's what we should be promoting then.
Thank you. Any other public comments?
Chief, aren't there laws? I mean, I'm trying to think, but...
Well, sir, we're moving to that in the agenda. That's next on the agenda.
Oh, okay.
Review of state laws. Why don't we move to 3A, and let our chief and our legal, and we did invite both state representatives to be here today. Obviously, with an election tomorrow, they couldn't, but they have offered to come if and when council discusses this at our council meeting. So let's turn it over to y'all. And as I said to the chief, we did not put this on here to question you or your work, but to get an idea of, does the law give you the tools you need to do what you do, and that's keep our community safe.
Understood, Mayor. Yes, sir.
Well, good morning. We just put some brief items for you on the slide. As Mr. Kinane mentioned, there is a proposed change to our state code based on the Florida law. It was introduced in February, did not proceed out of committee, and is, as I understand it, I think as Mr. Kinane mentioned, is planning to be reintroduced at the next session. This is the text, and it, I specifically put this in at least so you can see what the proposal is, so you can compare it to what we have existing state law and what our enforcement capabilities are, which the chief can specifically talk about enforcement. So it defines child conveyance, structure, buildings, those types of things. And the key language is highlighted in B1, who lures, entices, or attempts to lure or entice a child. Misdemeanor, and then it moves forward, misdemeanor, second, and then finally you get to the felony situation where if it's under the age of 13. So those are the distinctions that this proposal makes. Of course, we have no idea whether it will continue to move forward or whether it will be substantively changed, but this is what Florida enacted, and at least what is planned. So to move forward.
Maybe stop and ask a quick question. Attempt. That seems like a really gray area and would be very hard from a law enforcement standpoint. So we get lures, entices, but what does attempt to lure mean?
Yes, sir. When we get calls like this, we obviously investigate them thoroughly, interview the children who were the attempted victims or perceived victims, what was going on. And then if we can locate the individual, we do a comprehensive interview with them. And what we're looking for, Mayor, is criminal intent. Simply talking to a child who happened to be skateboarding and happened to say, hey, I've got some gum, would you like a piece? That doesn't take it to that criminal intent. What we have to do as investigators is determine through witnesses, through our interviews, through our interrogation, was that next step was, well, I got some candy, why don't you come in my car and get you in my car? You've got to make the act of attempting to take away the victim. So that's why we're very thorough when we do this investigation, not only to, again, sometimes imaginations do run a little wild, or their perception could be that they were in danger, like Mr. Kinane said. I don't disagree with that. But we also have to make sure we're investigating thoroughly so we don't arrest someone. In this day and age, it's silly to even offer a kid candy, believe me.
Right.
I certainly wouldn't do it. But the current law we have on the books now, the kidnapping law, we can charge someone today if we were to have a case where we could prove in criminal intent, we could charge them with attempted kidnapping with this law. With what's proposed, obviously gives us a little more leverage and a little more latitude, I think, when we're looking into these.
Okay, so let's say you're in a really big department store and somebody comes along and sees a child and the child likes a toy and the person says, I'll buy you that toy, and goes to the counter and buys it. Whatever, says I put that on my tab or whatever. Okay, that's a very different thing than saying, why don't you come out to the parking lot? Or I'm trying to avoid the thing where somebody is accused of something when they really have not tried to move the child from point A to point B. I've got elderly parents, elderly relatives, and they're very big-hearted, and my dad's the type of guy that would be in a store and see a child looking at a toy and say, I'm buying that toy for that child. And because he's 83 years old, I don't want somebody to think he's trying to do anything wrong.
I would defer to Mr. Pecorini here in a moment for the legal part of it, but from an investigator, I would have to say when we're looking at this, if that toy was purchased with the conditions, you got to come with me. Now
that's,
I have,
a different
in my
story.
Opinion, I have an act.
Right.
I have some intent that I can go with and I can work with versus doing just like you said, we think it might be an innocent, the kid, you know, how we do. We see kids all the time looking at candy bars in stores or something, and mom don't want to buy it for them. Oh, I'll buy it. Right. Versus try, I think when you're looking at trying to remove them from where they're at and forcibly take them away or entice them away for some type of something, I think the language is something other than legal means, right. Is when we look at that.
Got it. Thank you. Right. Sorry, Ms. Pagliarini.
No, yes, sir. The part of the distinction I think you're asking, at least in the proposed law, if you look at the definitions and then B1, into a conveyance dwelling or structure. So that's part of the analysis. And then, of course, it differentiates among ages. Here is what South Carolina has on the books, and this is the general kidnapping statute. And the asterisk item underneath, of course, there's a common law ability to charge for attempt. So the act of kidnapping versus the attempt, even though that is not codified by common law, it could be charged. This is a much more broad definition, doesn't have the building or vehicle, so that's what we have. Of course, I'd leave it to the chief to distinguish whether this is an effective statute or not, or whether something more is needed. Although, in my opinion, the proposed statute does provide some more definition. And go ahead. Of course, just to follow up, we also have the criminal sexual conduct laws. Right. That involves a different element, not just the luring. That's also on the books.
And I would agree, Ms. Pagliarini, the current law we have does give me the ability to make a charge, but the proposed language or proposed amendments certainly would help us in our pursuit of justice. And when we have instances like this too, we will sit down with the solicitor and go over all the elements that we've been able to develop and get some advice from them whether to charge or not charge. So right. we do take it serious, and we look as deep as we can to see if we can make that leap to the criminal intent.
Right. Council members, before we move on. Yes, Gary.
Just so looking at this one compared to the other one, I kind of like this one because, I mean, look at it, it's 30 years, felony 30 years, first offense. The other one was misdemeanor?
No, I believe the law is going to be the same. If I read right in the amendment, was it not going to be the same penalty phase, I thought? I was looking at it was still going to be the 30 years, unless they were sentenced for murder, which could be life or death penalty.
The way that the proposed law is set up is 18 years or older is misdemeanor.
Gotcha.
When you get to 13, then it starts the felony convictions. So under the age of 13, felony. So it is a different penalty structure. That's one of the things, typically when these go through the process, that might be one of the things that is changed or amended from what you see if it does move forward.
But the one we have now is more more stringent than the other one, because it doesn't say anything about misdemeanor in this one.
Right. That's right. Kidnapping, judicial discretion not to exceed 30 years. You know, there's a lot of...
Pretty serious.
Up to, right.
0 to 30.
Yeah.
That's a good point as to whether the new law would be more restrictive from a penalty standpoint.
Yes. Mr. Bustos and Ms. Wilson.
But on this kidnapping, it says, to me, it's more of a, you're seizing, you're kidnapping, you're abducting, you're carrying away, where the other, luring, is just an attempt to get to that point. So, you know, this is the actual, pick somebody up, and that's not just a child, that's anyone that you grab, pull, and put in a car and drive away with. That's kidnapping. Luring is the act of attempting, as I see it, to get to the mm-hmm. kidnapping phase. So with a child, if you even attempt to do that, you know, you can be arrested, where with adults, it's or even children, if you complete the act by picking them up and putting them in a car and driving away with them, you have abducted or kidnapped them.
Well, sir, with the what we use for the luring part right now, the word decoy.
Oh, is that it?
Decoy is just what that sounds like. It's using something to entice or bring you in. So that's how we look at that definition and can be applied that way.
Mm. Okay.
Ms. Whitley, yes.
Then I guess, so take it back to like the real world instance that recently happened with the man with the, offered the kids the gum. He was not charged with anything and he was not brought in for anything because if there had been a child luring law, would you have been able to bring him in versus what is exists right now? With the
no, ma'am, we would not have charged him. Our investigation...
Even with the child luring?
Because our investigation determined, going back and talking to the young people involved and to him, that there was no criminal intent. It was a very innocent person who thought he was being nice to some kids that he saw because he worked in the area, because his kids had skateboards and he was offering them. He said, hey, by the way, I keep gum. Would you like some gum? And he was going back to work. So even with that language, it still would not make, we would not have made a criminal charge.
Do you feel that if there were a child luring law, that you would have more leeway to bring someone in who was kind of borderline, you know what I mean? Who do you feel that it would give you more flexibility is my question.
I do. I mean, the amendment as it's written would obviously help law enforcement. Again, what we have currently will still bring you in. If it's like we did with this gentleman, we interviewed him, just like we did with anybody else. But with this language, it certainly would give us a little more in the bag to deal with and look at. But again, even with that, this particular case we're talking about would not have been criminal charges.
And with something like this moving forward in the legislature, what is there at the town level that we can do at this point to either show our, would you do a resolution to show our support for that, or could we, like with the plastic bags ban, enact something ourselves to kind of like demonstrate that this is something that the state should take on? What
the first you mentioned, you could do that. You could have a resolution in support of such language. What seems to be most effective is to contact directly members of your local legislative delegation. Give them a phone call, try to meet with them and say this is very important to the citizens of Mount Pleasant.
On that note, just for the record and all, I think we've had this conversation and I think I know the answer, but would it complicate or overcomplicate things if we had a local ordinance?
With our local ordinance, we're talking bring it to our court, are we not?
So our court, right. Misdemeanor. Yeah. The issue there, and
I'm not saying I think it's a good idea, but people are asking the question.
We dealt with this in the texting a few years back,
right?
And the issue was the state had no law at that point. The state had not weighed in. The legal question here is whether the state has preempted the field. Is this kidnapping that we currently have, would that nullify our law? We do not know whether the state is going to move forward or not. We wouldn't know that until it's challenged. If South Carolina does not pass that state law, the state, and we end up enacting some sort of ordinance, whether it's the same language, you know, I think that's the only risk we'd have is whether someday it would be overturned.
And the maximum penalty in our court is 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
That's maximum. Where even if we had something, sir, and council members, on the books, if I had enough probable cause and I developed criminal intent, I would go with this just
with
to
that.
Go with as much as I could on that person
right.
to get him out of here.
Right.
And I can tell all of you sitting on this board or this committee, we will do that.
Right.
And we will charge based on this law or if the new law is passed, but we will charge somebody if it's proven that we can prove that's occurred.
Got it. So also for the record, the best way is to stick with the strengthened state law, obviously.
In my opinion, Mayor, yes. And Ms. Whitley, to add to what we can do, I as police chief and other police chiefs around the area, we'll attend these hearings often and voice our support for these. I've gone to Columbia more than once on different things and sat down. Body cameras, one for instance, where we sat down with them and went to actually testify at the hearings to show our support. And that's something we certainly do going forward with dealing with this.
Anything else, counsel? Would it be advisable for us to recommend to counsel a resolution supporting the strengthened new proposed law? Let's, for all intents and purposes, call it the proposed new child luring law, especially given that it's two legislators who represent parts of our community. And they have both offered to come next at our next council meeting as well. I mean, I don't see a problem with that. I don't know if we normally do resolutions on pending legislation at the state. We've done it before. Okay.
Sure.
All right. What are the mechanics of that? We obviously don't have the wording for us to vote on at this committee. Could we have a resolution for the council meeting?
Yes, sir, absolutely.
Okay, and just do it that way?
And it was included in a bill, so we could just simply list the number of the bill. And
got it.
That way it's very specific.
Okay. Does that sound good, council? Okay. Why don't we plan to do that and have a resolution ready for that meeting? Thank you very much. Thank you, Chief.
Yes, sir.
Item 3B is a review of legal department structures in comparable South Carolina cities. I think as we have grown and changed and looking at our budget and the cost and the complexity of legal issues, I think we touched on this last year when we got some new council members and a lot of us in new positions. So I didn't know if you wanted to take it from here, if staff will take it from here.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I think the item was asked for by Ms. Whitley, and we are prepared. David is prepared with a structure, similar information we had provided last year. We're happy to take it any way you see fit.
Okay. All right. Proceed.
Thank you, sir. Just current legal department structure, when we've looked at entities throughout the state, all of the similar population municipalities, and the two things that you find, the first is that the budgets and the setups are very different, and so you have to dig in. We've called essentially all of the attorneys involved. The budgets sometimes have some money here, some money there. They budget things differently. Some entities provide very little budget information. Columbia, surprisingly. The second thing you find is nobody likes to pay lawyers. And everyone was emphatic about that.
Yeah.
So here's what we have in place. This is our entire legal department. And a full-time prosecutor, a contracted prosecutor. We contract by law because we are required to, a public defender. And then you get to the corporation counsel side of it, which is two full-time positions, which are contracted, and a full-time, the prosecutor's office has a full-time secretary, as well as corporation counsel has a full-time secretary. So that's where we currently stand. And the history of the process, as you all know very well, the town had an in-house counsel, Mr. Alan Young, for many, many years. And in 2011, an RFP was sent out, and the town went through a process and hired. So the important parts of the contract are two full-time attorney positions. We have historically used three attorneys to fulfill those two positions and support staff. We also maintain in the law firm as part of, it is not required by the contract, but we do a real estate paralegal and a full-time litigation paralegal. You didn't ask about scope, breadth of services. Certainly that'd be a question for the town administrator and staff. Again, the secretary is a full-time legal secretary to support corporation counsel. And Trisha also, you see her sitting up front manning the front desk up there. So she serves a number of roles. This is, you all know very well, the three lawyers. Jim is very old.
That was cold.
Back that up.
That was cold.
So what we do, I think this question was asked, I think Mr. Bustos asked a little bit about this last year and why we put it in. Over the years, we've really developed a procedure to where the point person for particular issues, and again, that would be a question for staff as to how they are served by that. We do feel we try to identify a lead on particular issues related to finance, procurement, those things. Those are those are a little different than what we do on the land use planning, real estate, and those matters. So this is the budget for 18-19. The total budget, which is this is the entire legal department, and I've highlighted the Corporation Council, and that's the total allocated for Corporation Council in-house plus the outside. So here's how it breaks down. The HMP contract and three attorneys. So this is what the contract, in addition to the contract, there is a $220,000 litigation budget for this year. That is a historically high due to specific ongoing litigation. And then the legal secretary share, the $85,000, we've broken that down. So the contract, out of the contract proceeds, the town does not pay health insurance, Social Security, malpractice insurance, firm overhead, staff salaries, or license fees, bar fees, or continuing education. Those are all part of the contract requirements that we are expected to provide. Again, the litigation matters, specifically this year and last year, we've had two high-profile cases that those budget items, or that budget was expanded for those purposes. And it also covers outside counsel on other matters unrelated to that specific litigation. All right, other jurisdictions. This is in general by population order, so we've put the population up top. City of Charleston, primarily in-house counsel model, 9 full-time personnel. The city does retain outside counsel for matters including real estate, litigation, insurance, healthcare, property acquisition, and special projects. And of course, we've broken it down into salary benefits, and then their outside legal counsel budget. So what we've done is an apples to apples. These budget figures for others do not include their prosecutor offices, so this is strictly corporation counsel. So at the end, you'll see how all the various municipalities stack up. One thing you'll see current, almost every municipality retains outside counsel for real estate matters, most litigation, and property acquisition. So those are typically what they go outside for, in addition to bond counsel. And we do as well for bond counsel. That's a very specific element that all municipalities go outside for the bond matters. City of Columbia, number 2 in population, also an in-house counsel model. 10 full-time attorneys with the City of Columbia. That's not personnel, that's just attorneys, plus support. The city retains outside counsel again, real estate litigation. I had to speak to the chief attorney there. They do not break down. Their total budget is 2.2. Her estimate for their prosecutor was 300,000. So their estimate is a 1.9 million budget for their corporation counsel. And they provide precious few details at the budget at the City of Columbia.
I'm sorry, but popping back to Charleston, it was 9 personnel, but how many of those are attorneys?
Right now, ma'am, they have 6.
Okay.
Francis Cantwell retired, and I know they're looking at some other options as to how to staff that, so that's an ongoing issue for them. City of North Charleston, we start to get more comparable to our population. This is a contract model. Brady Hare is their corporation counsel, different than ours in this capacity. Mr. Hare is a solo practitioner. He has no staff as part of that. He is their corporation counsel by contract, and the city also employs 4 full-time, including a deputy city attorney. So they have 3 attorneys plus their 2 support staff. And again, they rely on outside counsel for matters including real estate and litigation. So the salary, benefits, their contract is $80,000 a year for Mr. Hare. And they budget outside counsel, legal counsel as well, similar to ours. And their total budget is about $1 million. City of Rock Hill provides almost no information The budget figures are broken down. This is their contract, so this is the a contract scenario. Around $400,000, it varies by actual cost. And the caveat here is these figures do not include in-house staff support, which are budgeted under their administrative. And they had a very difficult time breaking that out, and so I didn't want to speculate. But they also have a special litigation expenses that they do from year to year. So that's about that. That reflects their contracted cost. City of Greenville, in-house model, one city attorney, three assistants, and four support staff. Typical what they retain outside for, and $1,034,000 for the city of Greenville. We put in there Charleston County as well, our home county, significant higher population, but they contract with Mr. Joe Dawson, and they're very protective of that contract for amount for some reason, and he wasn't going to tell me. But based on communication with their legal counsel, the assistant legal counsel, it is north of $350,000 for Mr. Dawson's services. And their total budget, again, for corporation counsel side is $1.6 million. So this is a summary by population and budget. Charleston, primary in-house, Columbia, primary in-house. They also lead the way with $1.5 to $1.9 million budget. North Charleston, contract plus in-house, $1 million. Town of Mount Pleasant, contract limited in-house. And what I mean by that is there is a support staff, a secretary. Rock Hill, we don't know the inside support staff, so we put a plus there. Greenville and Charleston County. So those are the summary by population. And that is the information. I'm happy to answer any questions.
I'll yield to council in a second. I guess the first question I would have is, when was the last time, I think y'all have a four-year contract right now?
Yes, sir.
Right. When was the last time that was, I guess the word is competitively bid on? I mean, have there been any other bidders in the last 6 years, or how is it normally done?
Right. That is a question for administration. Okay. I don't know. What I can tell you is I don't know what the review process is by the town. Last year, there was a contract renewal. And I believe you were there for that, sir.
I was.
I believe you were. I don't believe Ms. Bradley was.
I wasn't here. Alan was still here when I got off in 2009.
I'm talking about last year.
Last year.
Oh, last year. I'm sorry.
Right. Okay.
I don't think anybody on this table was here in 2011 when it was when they did the RFP.
Right.
Yes, sir. So aside from the original contract when it was competitively bid, that has been it. After that, in 2011, it has been a renewal based on when the elected body felt it was appropriate.
Yes.
What was the length of the contract initially in 2011? So how often has it been renewed and for what terms?
Do you recall exactly? I want to say 5 years.
Yes, ma'am. The original contract was for 3 years, and it's been renewed two times since then. The first contract was for one position, and it was the town wanted to dip its toe into the process, as we understood it, and get an idea for what was going to happen with it. The one really was not, it wasn't enough. And so it was increased to two full-time positions. That was the first change. And then
that was in 2014? 3 years?
Ma'am?
So 3 years, is that 2014, that it was renewed for two?
The first one was, the process was changed, I believe, after a year.
Oh,
after
okay.
A year and a half or 2 years. I don't have the exact date on that, ma'am. But then it was moved to the current two full-time model.
Okay. And we are currently under contract until when?
That was 4 years since
last
20.
Last
so I think we're about a year and a half into this. Yeah. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yes.
It appears to me, looking at the numbers there, that we kind of got the best bang for the buck, especially since we've got, you know, included in it, we're getting what we're paying for two attorneys. We have three, and we We have a legal secretary that comes along with it who answers the phone and things like that. It appears to me like we got the best bang for the buck right now, according to the numbers I'm looking at.
The dollar amount that is going to our two full-time attorneys is north of $500,000, or thereabouts. Is that correct?
No, ma'am. No. The contract is for two full-time positions, and of course we maintain our staff, which supports us well, and that is
$463,000. I see.
So if you're with your firm and the two of y'all that are full-time, do you have time to work on anything for the firm, or is all you do is Mount Pleasant?
Part of, over the years, Mayor, that's what happened. We have three lawyers handling the 80 hours a week, essentially, mm-hmm. So that time has been limited. We have other attorneys and staff at the office, but three of us work. My work is mainly for the town of Mount Pleasant, and it's become over the years just less and less for anyone else. The only thing I generally maintain outside of the town of Mount Pleasant is some residential real estate work, which we have staff that mainly does that, and some matters, eminent domain, the DOT does ask me to handle them in special and complex cases. So that's basically what I limit to outside. Jim does occasionally get called by some of the hospital systems for HR type or hospital contracts, but again, the last few years have mostly been with the town, through the town of Mount, work with the town of Mount Pleasant.
Okay, yes, ma'am.
So the reason that I put this on the agenda is because I wanted to have a better understanding of how it works in comparable municipalities, because as a former attorney, my instinct was that having in-house attorneys made the most sense for a town of our size. And then I also found it was interesting to me that the contract would have been just sort of renewed without any sort of competitive process where we would, you know, because our town's needs change, things change, and we want there to be a competitive, an opportunity for there to be a competitive process, just kind of like with our judges. We just changed that as well, where before it was the judges kind of automatically got their renewal, and now we're actually opening the applications to the public and having new fresh blood and fresh eyes. So, I think that we... for me anyway, this is very interesting to look at the fact that the two largest cities are have pure in-house counsel. The North Charleston's closer and does have this accommodation of contract. But I think as we move forward long term, that that exploring the potential of moving to a general counsel system is something that maybe we should look at as a town.
I agree, and I'll say what's on the record. I was a no vote on renewing the contract last time. There was no review. There was no evaluation. And there was no competitive bid for that. And here we are today, we're looking at judges. What do we pay municipal judges?
Gosh, sure. I think it's $15,000 a year.
$15,000 a year, and we're reviewing them, and they're reapplying, and we put it out for bids, but we'll pay a law firm $500,000 and extend, and this is no personal offense, but the process, I think if we're going to have somebody contracted for that much to this city, we ought to at least do a review, an evaluation, and some sort of competitive bid. So I don't know what y'all want to do. Yes, sir.
I was here, Joe. I think you were here with me back when Alan was here. Mm-hmm. And whenever we had a major case, he brought in Francis Cantwell, and he brought in people to help him. So it's not like the in-house counsel did it all. They bring in outside help. It specializes, which cost more for the town. I don't know how much the budget was back in those days, but Frances did not come cheap. She was best at what she did, and she seemed to be in the executive session with us a lot. So in-house counsel is going to be asking for outside help to come in, which is going to get the cost up as well. I like the idea of having three attorneys in there for the price of two for the town. I think they've done a good job with that, and I'm just saying, I've had the benefit of having in-house counsel, and I liked Alan a lot, but Alan would bring in specialists to help us with different things throughout. So it wasn't just that our in-house counsel did everything. They did bring in help.
Well, yeah.
No, go ahead, Ms. Quill.
No, but that, and that's how it works. The in-house counsel manages a wide range of law firms, but you kind of have a, it's kind of like having a whole array of choices that you can choose who you want to do certain items. So you can go to different experts and have their area of expertise, and so you have, you know, the full array of options in South Carolina versus limiting yourself to, you know, the particular contract that we have.
Mr. Busa?
Yeah, Gary, you're right. And Alan was the in-house attorney. But, you know, we would go outside based on the personality of the attorney, based on the subject matter, based on a number of things that we also used to go out and put attorneys under retainer just to conflict them out. So if there was some specific case coming, we knew they couldn't handle it because they were an expert in that field, and we'd get them on retainer for something, and that way we were, you know, we knew we didn't, wouldn't have to face them. I mean, it's a strategy, and it's legal, and it's done. How many, David, how many outside firms have you gone, have y'all gone to in different cases? Can you give us an idea in the type of case?
Yes, sir. Of course, for the current Park West matter, initially we had to go outside because individual council members were sued and we were required to get outside counsel. Uh-huh. We do have a few others that we do as well. Of course, remember our insurance covers, one of the things that has changed in the last few years is the expansion of our insurance. So the first few years we were here, that need was a little bit higher. We just didn't have the lawsuits. When lawsuits became more prevalent, we were able to get our insurance expanded to cover that. So that is a function of insurance, the most of them.
Right. Okay. Because that, you know, we can't, I don't, you know, at least I don't think we can expect y'all to be experts in everything. You know, and sometimes with a town this size, we get some odds and ends that come along and we have to contract outside. I mean, it's...
Right, sir. And that's with the bond. The bonds
yeah,
are a good
truth.
Example.
Yeah.
Things like that. I think mm-hmm. the idea, at least what we've seen through talking with everyone, there are always going to be specific matters. Some of the specific matters at the primary in-house and even the contract, real estate, and why real estate? Because none of the people on their staff are licensed title insurance agents, right? So they go for that. Eminent domain and property acquisition, there are very few lawyers who do that. Bond counsel, those are the things. Of course, what we've tried to do is bring the object, I assume what town council's desire was all along, was to have as much of that stay without having to go out.
Mm-hmm.
We've been fortunate to minimize that, but yes, sir, there are examples of that.
Yeah.
Our insurance has gone a big way in helping with that.
I know when we used to do condemnations, we used to call Mr. Paglarini.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, to come and do those, even when Mayor Hallman was there. But I think there is a certain amount of flexibility in that system because they're, and I think lawsuits are getting more and more complex every time you turn around, they're getting more complex.
That's why you see, Mr. Bustos, when you go to the primary in-house, you'll see that they're budgeting more and more if you track it. The city of Charleston is budgeting, even with their staff, over $400,000 for
yeah.
outside. Columbia, I got a verbal number. It was mm-hmm. we think this is the number, and that was around $350,000 or $400,000, and that's with 10 attorneys. So. You are starting to see litigation becoming more prevalent. Even North Charleston, you know, they're about the same as us with their outside. And our budget this year is a little bit larger simply because of the specific cases that we're
right.
dealing with. Historically, I think it used to be 50,000, if I'm not mistaken. It changes. It really depends what's in front of you at any given time.
Right. Thank you.
We have a public comment. Yes, sir. Anyone else, too?
Kevin Kinney, 3032 River Vista Way. There's a number of ways to approach changing this if that's the desire of council. It doesn't have to be all or nothing approach. I mean, there's places that'll do a claims office right in-house, and when a lawsuit comes in that the town knows they're going to pay on, it's a lot easier to pay it on Monday than it is 70 Fridays from now. You know, you pay, and you're going to pay less by getting it done quicker. And that's the type of thing, I mean, I think we don't have, frankly, we have one former attorney on the legal committee. We have a former police officer from years back. That's helpful. But if we look at this from a business perspective, I think this town's failing. I mean, there's cases that should probably be settled sitting on the books indefinitely. And I'm not saying that's anything against the attorneys. You know, they maybe they think it could be dismissed down the line, but there's work to get there. And if you could buy your way out of it on the first month, it's a better deal over the long haul than paying the attorneys for years. So I think there's kind of a hybrid. Dealing with the insurance companies, you can, if you have a claims office, you can negotiate lower insurance rates by handling what I call the nuisance cases in-house, and it doesn't get to the policy. So, and it doesn't necessarily require an attorney to negotiate. You know, a paralegal can negotiate a settlement on some of these minor cases. So it's something to think about.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Any other comments from the public? Since we have our budget season coming up, Mr. DeMore, let me ask you a question, and you know, we've got council members that can take a look at things, and all of council does, and we'll look at this kind of as a budget situation. Let's look at a comparison of two previous things. One was what it looked like when we had an in-house attorney. How big was the outside, you know, how much did we have to hire outside attorneys in that? And the other is the pre-insurance, because I believe that kicked in. I think y'all got that for us since you and I got elected in 15.
It was 2 years ago.
Two years ago. Gary, yeah. You were here. Mm-hmm. So a certain, and let's let everybody, all the new council, everybody, and I certainly know I need it, what that covers. So that's part of that work that y'all don't have to do is covered. I think it's land use, but I'm not sure.
Well, of course, you have your standard trip and fall, slip and fall, car accident. That's your basic insurance. What we have, as of right now, I still believe we're the only municipality to have it, is that land use extension. It is not full. There are caveats, and it's probably a good idea to discuss that if you want to, because it's a little bit more than what we can deal with today.
Okay.
But it is, you know, we do have that, and still have that.
Got it.
So to follow up, these current substantive lawsuits were before the insurance coverage, and that really triggered us at least going to the SMRF and requesting that, and that's how it happened.
Okay. And for the record, SMRF?
It's our insurance carrier, the municipal fund insurance carrier.
Yes, sir.
You know, I understand that they cover us on certain things and all, but I think we still need somebody to be watching them as well. They cover a lot of people around the state, and I'm not saying they don't have our best interest in mind, but I think that we need to clearly watch them. And, Kevin, I don't want to send a paralegal to fight a court fight with us.
Not court.
Whatever.
Way before court.
Yeah, but I don't want to send a paralegal. I want to send an attorney to do business with another attorney. It's just the way I feel about it. So, I would never vote for something or never go for something like that. We've got good representation, the best representation, and when we're, you know, our citizens expect us to put our best foot forward. You don't send second string in when first string needs to be there. So I would never go for that. I think it's important to always have your first string in there. But not only that, but to have our folks watching out to make sure that the SMRF, you know, does the job that they should be doing.
All right. Well, we've got time for everybody to have input and look at models and look at comparisons, price comparisons. Another comparison I would like to see is what other perennial contract is there for someone who provides services to the town? I don't know if it's landscaping or something like that. It's just a lot of money in one contract that just has been renewed for 7 years without any outside, without any RFP, without any evaluation, just a vote in executive session. and this is taxpayer money. And I don't know what other contract we do that on.
Just for the record, there were no votes in executive session.
I'm sorry, not votes. You're right. We do discuss contractual matters there. Thank you. I appreciate it. We did not vote in executive session. Speaking of which, if that closes out this item, the next item on our agenda is executive session for the distinct purpose of reviewing municipal judge applications. Is there a motion that we go into executive session for that purpose?
Second.
We have a motion. We have a second. Is there any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And let me read this. We are going into executive session to review municipal judge applications. And upon reconvening, we may take action on any item listed on an executive session agenda or discussed in an executive session during a properly noticed meeting. We are in executive session.
Do we go to the lunchroom?
Please, sir. We can.
Go to the lunchroom.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Have more pizza.
All right, we are reconvened from executive session.
I have a motion. I would like to move that the town administrator move forward on the municipal judge applications as discussed in executive session.
Second. We have a motion. We have a second. And before we vote, let me just say no votes were taken in executive session. We don't do that. All right, so we have a motion. We have a second. Do we have any discussion? All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion passes. This brings us to item 5, which is adjournment. If there's nothing more for the good of this committee, we will stand adjourned.
Thank you. All right.